a word for those of you who aren't so familiar with the program about it. This was started, now, how many years ago? Seven years ago, by Mr. and Mrs. Rumsfeld, who had the idea of doing something, unquote, for the rising generation of very talented young men and women in Central Asia, the Caucasus, including Afghanistan and Mongolia. They, Secretary Rumsfeld had met many younger officials in his running around from conference to conference. And as he put it, he said, these people were the only ones who saved me from terminal boredom. He found them interesting, promising, even exciting, and you wanted to use some money that had been made back when a company he had it in Chicago had had the good fortune of inventing sweetener, the stuff you put in your coffee, put aside some money from that, and they decided to devote it to this purpose, and it's been a very successful program. I don't say this to embarrass present or past fellows, but on this earth you would have to look very far to find equally interesting and also competent and also people of such goodwill as the Rumsfeld Fellows, as a group. And so the purpose here is for you to meet them and for them to meet you. And we have a initial group to come up here forward, and I'm going to just turn the floor over to Jose. Where is he? There you are. Rahimov from Tashkent, who will in turn introduce everyone else. They will speak for a total of strictly no more than a half an hour, and then the floor will be open, and there is no topic that's off limits. Okay? So do not sit on your hands. If they can't answer it, that's their problem, not yours.
I'm working in the Academy of Sciences and also teaching at the university. It is indeed a great privilege to be in this program. I would like to personally, on behalf of our colleagues, also to thank Rumsfeld Foundation, Rumsfeld himself, his family, Frederick Starr, David, Sarah, Bridget, all of you for extremely great work. There is good two news. One is good news about the program, second is the bad news. The good news is we all had meetings which I never had in my life. The bad news is still it's not easy to understand all complicities of the United States. Dear friends, let me, because our presentation will be very short, with a brief introduction, I would like to point out several notes. The first one is Central Asia, for many centuries, was indeed the integral part of the world civilization and historical development. And last book of Professor Starr concerning the historical heritage once again showing the issue. The centrality determined, the intellectual hub which is used spread, and many, many others showing the Central Asia was a very important part for trade and intellectual exchange in the history of civilizations. So nowadays, what's going on, we see considerable change. If 20 years back, there was idea that the Central Asia is the back side of Russia, then we can change considerably, change policy of the United States toward the Central Asia, considerably change in China. The first effort Chinese was dissolve border issues, and they successfully mostly solved it. Nowadays, China amounts the nation state is the biggest trade partner of Central Asia, together with Russia, European Union, of course, the most, because they considering 20 states together. A little bit different in the United States approach, and we see all these changes, some strategic move and working from 2001 to several years later, and nowadays we saw some shifting. Even more, we saw some interesting tendency when nowadays, as I understood from the Deputy of Secretary presentation, Brook Institute, United States is changing strategy in pointing out, firstly, on the bilateral relation, and secondly, working more with China regarding Central Asia and probably other parts of the world too, which is absolutely new tendency in the concerning the Central Asian one. So the biggest, of course, actors is Russia, China, United States, and nowadays the European Union. As I say, nowadays EU is the biggest partner on the point of economy, a little less partner concerning the political and strategic issues, including security issues. And here, the coming issue of Afghanistan, what we can do, Afghanistan, especially after the new elections. And this is the European concern is, of course, mostly Afghan drugs, especially heroines, goes to Europe, but passing through Central Asia from different regions, but goes to Europe. The matter of production, consumer issues coming out. So from Central Asia perspective, of course, it's important to further stabilization of Afghanistan, which is will be very shortest way to us to reach not only South Asia, but the Far Asian too. And so nowadays, Central Asia, together with United States, Europeans are working on their own different transport communication projects. In general, there are more than 20 transnational transport corridors within the Central Asia. It's, of course, a good news. The bad news is, of course, we still not, we don't know what will be happening in coming years in Afghanistan, plus the escalation situation in the Middle East, plus Ukraine, which is no one expected 2 years back, such kind of escalation. I could say from Central Asia perspective, Ukraine was one of the most good partners for Central Asian countries. And from the trade point of view, Ukraine was in the second or third place within the CIA countries for Central Asia. So I could example, in 2013, Uzbek and Ukraine trade was more than 1 billion. Yeah? Last year, our trade decreased 20 times due to the unstable situation. So we, in Central Asia, we really wanted to quick stabilization of Ukraine as much as possible. It will be, and second is the changing of structure international system in regards to. So it's as you see, all North Central Asia countries announced that they will respect using international law regarding the situation in Ukraine and other places in the world. But then third issue is the issue of regional structure. There are many regional structures which was initiated by different countries, by Russia several one, by China SCO now is a new Silk Road Belt. And the interesting is, of course, there is no multilateral approach from the United States, except, of course, NATO as a strategic issue. And in the last publication, Dr. Starr and others suggested maybe in perspective some enlarging Central Asia and United States more multilateral approach. The Central Asia countries and Caucasus countries had a different view on all these multilateral structures. It's probably different aspects for discussion. My colleagues will continue. But in the final, I could say that for Central Asians, it is important not conflicting approach between the major powers, but cooperative approach. Example of conflicting issue is Ukraine, clear example, and other places could be said. So from Central Asia, it's good that this dialogue together with Central Asians, not on Central Asia, but with Central Asia, together on white issues should be cooperation. So let me give the floor to my colleague from Kyrgyzstan who will speak about Central Asia, in particular in Kyrgyzstan, perspective of Eurasian Economic Union. Please.
Thank you very much. You pretty much described everything what's going on right now in the region. But I would like to put in perspective the, how in Kyrgyz Republic people see this current situation in the world and in our region. And I cannot talk on behalf of our neighbors or the whole region because I simply don't have enough knowledge and expertise in that. That's why I would like to give you a little bit background. What is Kyrgyzstan and why is it in is about to join the Eurasian Economic Union, because that's going to set up some kind of policy and policy implications in the future for the region, I believe. So Kyrgyz Republic, I'm not going to go far, but I will start from 2010 and describe a little bit what we have achieved for the last 5 years. If you look up the Global Economic Competitiveness Index, we have improved, like last year from 2014 and 15, we have made like 25 points improvement, leaving behind countries like Italy, Kuwait, and Iran, and this is just within 1 year. And if we consider our position in doing business, we have ranked 68th among 189 countries last year. I'm giving these numbers so you get a glimpse on that Kyrgyz government and Kyrgyz society is really in touch with the realities of the world, and we are really keen on improving our governance. We want to really be competitive, because in a globalization era, in order not to become a victim of it, you need to be very competitive. I guess that's the only way you can survive. And in that respect, the government is doing all it can to create an investment climate which is acceptable to most of the Western and Asian investors to come in and invest and get some profit out of this enterprise. So, and if I go to the process of joining the newly established Eurasian Economic Union, there is a lot of discourse going on that this is not an economic union, and it's very apparent that it's a political union. In my opinion, all unions are political, because if you take an example of EU or NAFTA, I mean, you will see pretty much at the beginning, most of the countries, they were not equals. Somebody has to be very powerful, somebody has to be very weak. But this is not the point. But I agree that it's a political union. Why we are joining it? That's the question a lot of people ask, even within Kyrgyz society. And there is like a split in the society. Some people say, why we are giving up our membership and our preferential situation right now? We can bring in goods from China and re-export that to Russian and Kazakh and CIS countries, which generated around $15 billion turnover. Trade turnover was around that every year. So people were really surprised. Why can't we just keep on doing that instead of joining and giving up some part of our sovereignty to Russia or to the Union? I mean, but the realities are different, because what if we are left out of this agreement, what will happen? Simply Kazakh on the north, they will close the borders, and what happens next? Most of our agricultural stuff, textile products, manufacturing, all goes to the Russian and Kazakh and Ukrainian and Belarusian markets. That's the pretty much almost 70% of our exports go to those countries, and annually we export textile goods to Russia on average around $1 billion per year. It's just a made in KG brand that is being sold to Russia, not mentioning the re-exporting the Chinese stuff. So we had that challenges since 2010, since the inception of this idea. There were a number of cases when Kazakh border would unilaterally close down and our producers would have trouble selling the products. I mean, the dairy products are not like you cannot keep them for long. It will just go bad, and you need to deal with it. And it's a country which is located with no access to sea, with no major deposits of natural gas or oil. Our economy mostly based on services, and it's like 56% of the GDP is made up of services. And it's a pretty much we are trying to build an economy, knowledge-based economy. But at the same time, if we look at the structure that we are negotiating with the members of the Eurasian Union countries, so as in the EU, when the later comers would negotiate the terms of accession, they would give some level of assistance. For instance, when the Greeks or Spaniards or whoever wanted to join, the main governments, Germany, France, they would subsidize heavily in order to make their economies to reach at least a sustainable level of membership. The same conditions we are also we got for ourselves. We are getting around $1.2 billion within first 3 years for leveling up the economy in the Kyrgyz Republic. So we also harmonizing our legislations. We're gonna create a common system of certification and laboratories, and those standards gonna be same within that union. And another reason why we are doing that, we are enlarging the market for our producers. It's going to be a 170 million market, which we can potentially penetrate and use in our advantage, because, as I said, our economy is made up of 56% from services and knowledge-based things. That's why we can capitalize on that and service the market of 170 million instead of just servicing 3 million people inside the country. Another important thing is almost 500,000 of our migrants are either in Russia or Kazakhstan. And if we didn't join the union, there would be a visa regime, of course, and which will complicate and create some domestic issues, as well as I guess foreign policy issues would be the another implication. And if you also take a look at the benefits, there is going to be facilitation of trade, because inside the union all the custom borders will be removed. And for instance, if you are exporting beyond the borders of the custom union, you will have time to pay the VAT up to 2 months later, which is also good for the business to like turn over the money and then pay later on. And another significant factor was the situation in Afghanistan, because by joining this union, we are pretty much getting the getting our borders protected from the insurgencies, because at the moment when the U.S. is withdrawing most of its troops, the situation is very volatile, and nobody can really predict what will happen. And that's why the most easy and most effective way to protect our borders would be in alliance with the countries, with our neighboring countries. And on this note, I will just stop. If you have questions, I can answer later.